Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, another week of college football, but we've got some good things to talk about with Matt Baker, our college football writer of the Tampa Bay Times, and we're going to be talking coaching. We're going to be talking about the coaches in the state of Florida, some of those that you know very well, and very few of which should feel good about the years they're having. A down year for the big schools and even some not-so-big schools here in the state. So, Matt, you've written about a lot of these situations. I'm going to jump right in with it in no particular order, but starting with the ones in Gainesville that has all the attention, and rightfully so, the Florida Gators, who are off this week. They play Georgia. Georgia is the number one team in the country. Could they beat them? Sure. Are we expecting them to? Not necessarily. If they don't, then Dan Mullen could be 4-4. I don't know that they're calling for Dan Mullen's job. Certainly you're not. But by the same token, there are a number of issues that would leave Mullen and people who evaluate him to wonder if he's the right guy at this point.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And thanks for having me on, Rick. It's I'm not calling for his head. I'm not going on that road. That's the one bridge that I think you and I and our jobs don't cross.
Correct.
I think it is our job to lay out cases for why this would happen, and at some point, timing and that sort of thing. So as I look at Mullen, if you would have told me a month ago that we'd be even thinking about hot seat, I would not have expected it. But things have taken a major turn. You know, losing to Kentucky, twice in 4 years, that's not good. It says more about Kentucky than it does about Florida. But still, that's been a point of pride for Florida for a number of years, and they won 30 in a row or whatever it was. So to lose twice in 4 years is bad. Losing to a rival in LSU is never good. Losing to an LSU team that has, it seems like, half their guys out with injuries. And, oh, by the way, we're in the process of getting rid of their coach while you were playing them. That's bad. I would have been told that if he loses to LSU, kind of watch out. Again, I'm not expecting him to get fired. I'm really not. But if you look at the case against him, you look at the fact that he's 2-6 in his last 8 games against Power 5 opponents, and he's 4-6 in his last 10 games overall. Jim McElwain and Will Muschamp were both 4-6 in their last 10 games when their exits were in the works, by the way. You look at the way things are going with recruiting. You know, as we record this on Wednesday, the Gators lost their top recruit, a 4-star, who was number 70 player in the country, a linebacker out of Alabama, who had been committed for several months. You know, as we record this, the Gators recruiting class is 18th in the country, and either 6th or 8th in the SEC, depending on what you do with Texas and Oklahoma. That's not good enough. Mullen's recruiting issues, you know, that's been a thing. It's not like it came out of nowhere. That was one of the questions people had about him when he took the Florida job, is can you get the dudes necessary to hang with Georgia and Alabama and those guys regularly? And so far, the answer has been no. You know, he's had some talent. They're not a bunch of slouches in Gainesville, but is it good enough to win a national title? The answer right now would suggest no. The other side of this, as we look at Mullen, though, is I go back to this. Who are you going to bring in? Who are you going to bring in that you know is better? There's a handful of coaches in the country that, yeah, I think that guy's better than Mullen. But Dabo's not taking the job. Nick Saban is not taking the job. So then once you get rid of those types of guys and start going down the pecking order, you're running into a risk. You would be, maybe like Mario Cristobal at Oregon. He's a Miami native. Maybe he would be interested in the job, but I wouldn't bet on it necessarily. Then you're looking at like a Billy Napier at Louisiana Lafayette, who's done great things, is going to be a very good SEC coach at some point, maybe sooner rather than later, but he's never been a head coach at the level like Florida. Can he do it? Maybe, but I don't know. I don't know if he's going to be better than 8-4. Like Mullen's probably going to be this year. You start thinking about coordinators. You start thinking about just who else would fit. Maybe James Franklin would fit, but I, is he going to do better? Maybe, maybe not. Lane Kiffin's not going to be the right fit. Bob Stoops is not walking through that door. Urban Meyer is not walking through that door. So as you go on and on, like, who are you going to get that you know is going to be, you know, with some degree of certainty, is going to be better than Dan? And I don't think there's a lot of viable candidates. So I guess the long and short of it is this. As I expect them to lose to Georgia in the cocktail party in Jacksonville. We'll talk more about that next week. Assuming that happens and Florida goes out and does what they're supposed to do the rest of the way, 8-4, that's not good, and it's not good enough at Florida. But I don't think it's a hot seat situation. I think we would be talking about Dan being on the hot seat going into the 2022 season. Now, if Florida were to lose to Florida State, which suddenly looks a lot better, or to lose to a bad South Carolina team with a new coach, or to a mediocre Missouri team or something like that, then maybe the tone changes. But you know, again, as we sit here today, I think he's safe, but things are a lot dicier, and he's in a lot more trouble, I guess I should say, than I would have thought a month ago.
Yeah, I would agree with you on all those points. And I also would just say, and you've raised these as well, and when you evaluate a coach, first of all, I always, in what you said about who's available, I don't disagree with, because you know, it is the University of Florida, though. But I always thought that, look, that's never a reason to not fire a coach. Who would we get, right? Like, well, the job isn't open, so you don't know who you would get. You know, and your job is to find the next, you know, great coach for the University of Florida, whether they're at a top program and you can get them to move or not. So let's just table that for a second, because they are always going to think we are the University of Florida. Look what we have to offer. Who wouldn't want to coach here? Granted. That said, you know, there were some things that Mullen did or didn't do, and you've raised these. I think they're legit. The quarterback situation. You know, he wanted to go with Emory Jones. Made sense at the time. Played really well against, in a close game against Alabama. But Anthony Richardson is a talent. I know he was hurt at some point. Yes, he threw a couple interceptions as well in the last game. But that's been scrutinized and should be, right? I mean, that's part of the evaluation. And the other thing is, he had a chance to change his defensive coordinator. They gave up 49 points to LSU. And I'm sorry, but it was a historically bad defense last year. And this year, if I score 42, I should win. So that's on Mullen as well, is it not?
It is. Let's go back to who you're going to get just really fast.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying. I definitely hear that. And, you know, every school thinks that their job is great and everything. But let's remember what's happened at Florida. Mullen mm-hmm. was not their first choice. He was probably not their second choice. I mean, in terms of the guys that they looked at. Chip sure. Kelly was the one they eyed early, and he didn't want it. He wanted UCLA, which was a better fit for him. And I get it. It made sense. Mm-hmm. Scott Frost was somebody that they were very interested in. And he wanted Nebraska, which, again, that's a perfect fit for him. Yeah. It made sense. We can, you know, Frost has not worked out. Chip Kelly, maybe, maybe not. So it's when you're hiring a coach nowadays, it's not a slam dunk, even if you're a huge name, just because the coaches at mid majors and smaller Power Five schools make so much money. I mean, shoot, the David Shaw at Stanford, according to USA Today's database, had, I think, the second or third highest salary in the country last year. Wow. Now, there were some weird wrinkles to that, but still. Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern is making $5 million or whatever it is, maybe more than that. So it's not the way it used to be where a big school calls,
yeah,
I'm going to listen because I can make bank somewhere else right now without the pressure of if I, you know, shoot, we're talking about Mullen on the hot seat, even in the abstract, after he went to 3 straight New Year's Six Bowls.
Right.
So that's just kind of where things are in the coaching. Now, back to your other point. Yeah, one of the reasons Dan is in this situation is, look, every fan thinks they can coach football and they know what they're talking about. The problem here is that the two biggest issues, I would say, on Saturday was, you know, looked like they were playing the wrong quarterback. We've talked about that. We've seen that. You know, my mom can probably tell you who if she watched the game, who she thought was a better quarterback. And it's not the guy they started. and the defense. This defense was not very good. Who's the guy leading the defense? Mm-hmm. Both of those are not, we're not second guessing at this point. We were first guessing it.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
Shoot, after Richardson blew up for, you know, ran for 160 yards against FAU, I think the first question to Mullen in the press conference was something along the lines of, why'd you start Emory? Mm-hmm. And you know, you gave Dan, and certainly I gave Dan the benefit of the doubt early on.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because he knows what he's doing. Yeah, Anthony Richardson looked great against FAU and USF. Whoop-de-doo. That doesn't mean he can do it against Tennessee and Georgia or whoever. But he just did it against LSU. And okay, that kind of shows you maybe they were playing the wrong guy. And then you look on defense, they were, like you said, historically bad. Literally one of the worst defenses, I think the worst defense at the University of Florida since World War II. And there were people clamoring for Todd Grantham to lose his job last year. He did not. The Gators chose to change assistants in the secondary, thinking that would change things. I mean, the defense is better, so maybe it has. But then you look on Saturday, and they give up the most rushing yards in a regular season game since Georgia Southern in 2013. Guy who, you know, a good running back at LSU who didn't do much all year, suddenly breaks out and breaks a record held by Leonard freaking Fournette, playoff Lenny himself. Yeah. Lombardi Lenny, excuse me.
Right.
Yeah, something's amiss. And I think if I look into my crystal ball here, I expect Anthony Richardson to start against Georgia. I asked Dan that directly, mm-hmm. whether Emory was still the starter during the SEC teleconference on Wednesday. Dan did not answer the question directly. Somebody else mm-hmm. asked him directly, is Emory still the starter? He did not answer directly.
Mm-hmm.
Given what Dan has said in the past about Emory being the starter, obviously Emory's the starter is what he said after week one.
Yeah.
There's a shift in tone, and I personally am reading into that. So I would expect Anthony to be the starter, and I would also expect, assuming Mullen is the, I guess either way, I would expect Todd Grantham not to be the defensive coordinator next year. I think those are the two obvious changes that are going to happen. One of them this year, one of them at the end of the year, and beyond that, I don't know. We'll have to see.
Well, it looks like they're not going to win probably more than 8 games, so that would be the second year in a row that they win 8. And I'm also wondering if with Georgia, let's play this out and say that Georgia wins this game in a week. Georgia mm-hmm. goes on maybe to win the SEC title and at minimum plays for a national championship. Hell, they may even win it. Okay, they're the number one team as we sit here. There's still a lot of football left, obviously, including in their own conference. But does that factor at all? Does it matter that Georgia now, it's not just Alabama, it's not the occasional LSU with Joe Burrow, but now Georgia on your border has you know, sort of emerged. And, oh, yeah, Texas A&M has beaten Alabama. So, you know, you got Texas coming, you got Oklahoma coming. The SEC is not getting easier. So does that factor at all in any of this? Does it matter that Georgia is now becoming a national power?
I think for fans it does. But I think, I mean, the administration, it's not like Scott Strickland's going to wake up on January 11th or whatever it is after Georgia wins the national title. And I think that would happen. Say, oh, my. Well,
we have to do something now.
The Bulldogs are good. Oh, yeah, holy cow.
They saw that coming.
Yeah. I mean, if they guard Devontae Smith on 2nd and 26 and Mercedes-Benz Stadium in January 2018, we're having a different conversation now. Right?
That's
because
true.
Georgia already would have one.
That's
so
right.
Georgia's been really good. Mm-hmm. It's definitely a concern, I think, for Florida that the gap between those two is, I mean, is just where it is right now.
Right,
so I guess
right.
as you kind of compare the two, it's not that Georgia's a superpower. I mean, they have been. The issue is that the gap isn't shrinking.
Right.
You know, maybe I'll have a different opinion in a week and a half after the cocktail party.
Sure.
Because, you know, Mullen, to his credit, was able to scheme around Georgia's talent advantage last year up there, and they wheel routed him to death and won and had the biggest win of the Mullen era.
That's right.
So maybe there's a way around that. But, yeah, that's the biggest concern is the talent gap is there. It's been there. And I haven't seen much to make me think that it's going to shrink. And certainly the way the recruiting class is going right now, because, again, Florida lost a 4-star guy today. Georgia got a commitment from a 5-star. Mm. That's where things are.
Yeah. Well, certainly a lot of work for Dan Mullen to do. I agree with you. There will be changes at minimum, and I don't necessarily expect or even know whether or not, to be honest with you, he's deserving of not continuing, and I would imagine he will. Great opportunity for them to win a big statement game in Jacksonville in a couple of weeks, which will be a great game regardless of the outcome. Right down the road here at USF, you've also written about this situation, Coach Jeff Scott in his second year. That was a game on Saturday. I watched it live. It was gut-wrenching from the standpoint that, you know, they had Tulsa. They should have won this football game, and they went for it, and rightfully so. Needed 1 yard to make a first down, run out the clock, didn't get it. Tulsa goes down, scores the touchdown. They wind up losing, and now they're running out of opportunities, because I think after this week's game against Temple Saturday night, you're going to be hard-pressed to find a ton of wins. Yeah, maybe at East Carolina on the road, but that's going to be, I think, a night game as well. Not too many victories left. So what's your assessment right now of USF, not knowing whether they're able to beat Temple or not on Saturday, and just how critical do you think it might be for a young coach like Jeff Scott, who just doesn't have a win over a Division I opponent yet?
Yeah, this is pivotal. I mean, Jeff said the other day that we literally just need a win, and I think he's exactly right. It's that obvious and that stupid and that simple. They need a win. Yeah. Jeff said this was the most painful loss he's had at USF, because I mean they had close games last year. But those games, I don't want to say smoke and mirrors or fluky or luck or anything like that. But the foundation, you know, Jeff was saying the foundation wasn't there. Where, you know, I think they lost to Memphis by like 2 points. Mm-hmm. So if they had made a field goal and won by a point or whatever the case may be, they still would have had a lot of issues. Yeah, they would have had a win. That's wonderful. It beats the alternative. But they would have woken up the next morning, holy cow, we still got a lot of issues. And now they're at a point where they've got a foundation. And they have things in place where they should be competing for wins. And on Saturday against a mediocre to bad Tulsa team, they were in position to win. They did what they should do and were in a position to win. And they didn't get it done. And, I mean, I think almost it's this simple. Good teams find a way to win, right? Bad teams find a way to lose. And that's where USF is. I think Miami's in a similar situation, where you look at what's happened with the Canes the last couple weeks, where driving down late against Virginia, instead of getting aggressive to go for a win go for a touchdown, they settle for a field goal and it doinks. Next week, pretty similar situation against North Carolina. They decide, you know what, we're going to go for the touchdown. We're going to do that. And then a ball gets very oddly deflected at the line, bounces around, and a D lineman picks it off with 6 seconds left or whatever to lose. Sometimes it's just that simple. Good teams find a way to win. Bad teams find a way to lose. Right now, USF and Miami are both finding a way to lose. And as we look forward with Jeff Scott, he needs to show something. He needs a proof of concept. What we're doing is working. Almost beating Tulsa is not good enough. Again, I don't know that he's on the hot seat necessarily. I think when you talk about a coach in his second year, a first-time coach in his second year, where year one was a pandemic, the AD Michael Kelly, the one who hired him. Michael Scott would be a very different kind of athletic director, by the way.
Yes, he would.
But Michael Kelly is the guy who hired him. I don't see hot seat, but I do see pressure and them needing something positive they can turn around and start selling to recruits and fans and players. Otherwise, things could get really ugly. Because again, the schedule. East Carolina is not the doormat they've been in the past. It's on the road on a Thursday night. That's a weird one. I have a hard time seeing that. Houston, I think, is undefeated in the conference. Cincinnati is a potential playoff team. At Tulane is possible, but that's a tricky one on the road in New Orleans. And then UCF. It's hard for me to see right now a win on that schedule if they don't get it done against Temple. And you're talking two straight years without a win over an FBS Division I A team. Boy, that's rock bottom, and that's a long way up from there.
Even the student section is not showing up at Raymond James Stadium, so forget about an on-campus stadium, you need a reason for those kids to go at minimum and cheer on for their team on Saturdays. 94 snaps his defense played on Saturday, and that's with and maybe partially due to the fact that they had a defensive touchdown, they had a special teams touchdown. I don't know what the odds are when you score both and don't win, but they're pretty astronomically in your favor to win the game, and they somehow didn't, and it was just – it was hard to watch. It really was. You know, it's funny because we began the season, it looked like Manny Diaz was the guy who had the most solid footing on his job, right? And we were all talking about Mike Norvell. Well, now, you know, Mike Norvell could pick up a win or should pick up a win this weekend against UMass before the Clemson game. And Manny Diaz is really fighting for his job down in Miami.
Yeah, Manny is in trouble. Again, he's a coach that seemed like the right fit. He is a Miami guy. He is as Miami as it gets. Mm-hmm. And he's a good recruiter. He's brought in some good players. And it just hasn't worked out. Again, I think he's did everything. As I kind of armchair quarterback his situation, I think he's made a lot of right decisions. You know, you look at his first recruiting class. He came in because Mark Richt left at a late time, and Manny left Temple after a prolific 18 days as head coach. They were behind in recruiting. They weren't going to get dudes, so they went through heavy on the transfer portal. And to some degree, it worked. You know, they knew they had issues. They made coaching changes, assistant changes after year one. They brought in De'Ara King to make this offense work. They came with a high-tempo spread offense to take advantage of Miami's athletes. That seemed like a smart move. You know, kind of adding in the glitz and glamour with, you know, Manny's big thing in the year one was the new Miami trying to make a big scene and the turnover chains and the touchdown rings and all this stuff. It all makes sense. I can logically understand where it went. It just hasn't worked. And he's in a, you know, he's in a rough situation. It's, I don't think Miami wants to fire him necessarily because I don't think they want to eat the money and then go through the coaching search again. Unless Mario Cristobal wants to listen, but if they don't beat NC State, he's running out of time. I think at this point it's more likely that they miss a bowl than they make one, and it's hard to see Manny. I don't want to give up on him yet in terms of him keeping the job, but it's hard to see him being the head coach this time next year. And like you said, Mike Norvell, that the fan base at FSU had soured on. And deservedly so after the Jacksonville State loss. Suddenly they've lost, or they've won two in a row. They've got UMass on Saturday. The only thing I want to say about that game, other than that it will be absolutely terrible and Florida State should win by a lot, the head coach at UMass is a guy named Walt Bell, who was Willie Taggart's first offensive coordinator. If Walt Bell had not taken the UMass job or been pushed to the UMass job, Florida State probably would have signed the quarterback they were had committed in that class, which is a guy named Sam Howell. You've heard of him? He's doing quite well. Not as good as we expected, but he's still doing well at North Carolina. And there's a whole different universe out there where that happens. And Willie probably still has a job or might still have his job. So, yeah, it's funny how things changed quickly in college football. But that's where we are.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
One thing that is changing, and that's conference realignment everywhere. The AAC, the American Athletic, has received applications now from six schools hoping to join the conference: Florida Atlantic, Charlotte, North Texas, UTSA, Rice, and UAB have all requested to join. Of course, they want to expand because the loss of Cincinnati, UCF, and Houston decided to eventually go to the Big 12. So, what do you think of this this expansion, and where would this leave the American Athletic Conference?
The AAC will still be, you know, one of the top. Them in the Mountain West will be the two top. Group of Five conferences. I think that's going to be pretty clear. This was the best outcome, I think, that the AAC could do after Boise and San Diego State and Colorado State, I think Air Force as well, said no. So they didn't have a lot of good options. I think the American needed to do something. And if you look at those markets, again, Charlotte is a growing area that produces a lot of good players. San Antonio is a lot bigger than you think and produces a lot of good players. Birmingham has a lot of good players. Houston, which is, you know, Rice at Houston, there's a lot of talent there. FAU, South Florida, has a ton of players. And mm-hmm. North Texas, which is in Denton and the DFW area, has a ton of players. Recruiting-wise, it all makes sense. You know, if I'm kind of looking long-term, which it's hard to do that in conference realignment because who the hell knows what's going to happen 5 years from now. But if you look long-term, Charlotte and UTSA are both programs that I would buy stock in. They're both very young and markets that can use a program like them, and I could see them doing very well. So I think from that perspective, it was good. Now, they're not the hugest names. I don't know how many USF fans are going to get super excited about playing Rice in 2024 or whatever. But I think that was the best they could do. The other interesting thing, the other reason I wanted to talk about this, again, those six schools, three of them are kind of interesting here. UAB just built a new stadium in downtown, about a mile and a half from campus. FAU opened their stadium, on-campus stadium, in 2011, I believe it was. North Texas has a very nice new stadium, about a decade old, right off I-35, 30,000 seat stadium. It's almost, Rick, like facilities matter in conference realignment. If you were, say, a program, maybe a younger program too, like some of the, like FAU, or thinking, it would be nice if I could move up to a bigger conference. Maybe building facilities and perhaps even a stadium is something that would be interesting in a long-term investment into a program's future as the conference realignment wheels move in the coming years.
I think I follow you.
Was that subtle enough?
Yeah, I think I follow you here. I think you're talking about that green and gold school again at the University of South Florida.
That's exactly right. This stuff matters. I mean,
yeah.
Would those schools have moved up anyway? Maybe, maybe not. But I certainly think UAB is more attractive because they have this beautiful new stadium. I certainly think FAU and North Texas are more attractive because they have those nice stadiums. And that stuff matters, especially as, you know, whenever the Big 12 decides to expand again. And I think they will in the next couple of years. That's certainly the expectation in the industry, is that they're going to expand again. I mean, shoot, I mentioned the Mountain West schools of Boise's and Colorado State's. Colorado State, by the way, new stadium. I mentioned them wanting to stay in the Mountain West instead of the AAC. One reason why is because everyone's working under the assumption that the Big 12 is going to be expanding in the next 3 to 5 years. So expanding again in the next 3 to 5 years. So that stuff all matters. When conference realignment, when those wheels turn, you need to be in the best position possible. You need to be winning, certainly to move up to a Power 5 level, but you need your house in order and everything else. And yeah, USF, you know, good for them for breaking ground on the indoor. That football training facility, operation center, whatever their term for it is, that's something that they need at some point as well. But if they could make serious progress, maybe even break ground, again, I'm spitballing here, in the next couple years on that on-campus stadium, that's a statement maker that the bigger conferences are going to look at when the wheels turn again. And we just saw it at a smaller level with half of the schools that the AAC has taken.
Very interesting. Good perspective on the need for a stadium and what that would mean beyond just the comfort of the students and the fans, but also attracting maybe a bigger conference. That's interesting. So we got some games that would capture the imagination around the country. One of them is your alma mater. Northwestern is at Michigan. I don't know how good the Harbaughs are. I think we're about to find out in the next few weeks, but Northwestern, always a tough opponent. So they go into the Big House. What do you think about this game?
Yeah, I just want to see Michigan kind of continue growing. You know, they had the close game in their last win at Nebraska. I'm still not buying Harbaugh 100% yet, or not buying Michigan 100% yet. Northwestern's another opportunity for them to kind of prove it to me before, you know, they got Michigan State the next week, or at Michigan State, at Penn State, and then Ohio State later in the season. Well, they're in a stretch where it'll be put up or shut up time for the Khakis.
Absolutely. And, you know, speaking of teams that may have been ranked a little too high, what about Purdue going into Iowa? And still my favorite tweet of the year, perhaps, is Purdue trolling Iowa and saying, "We knocked the number two out of Iowa," which, in fact, they did. They were ranked number two. Look, I don't know what to make of the Big Ten when I just saw their best team get knocked around by Purdue.
You saw an Iowa team that is very Iowa, maybe even so Iowa that it hurts, where their defense and their offensive line are very good. I mean, I was debating with somebody the other day whether Linderbaum, the Iowa center, should be on my Heisman ballot. You know, we're a long way away from me having to decide, but I'm going to give him a look because he's that good. Wow. And again, that's just Iowa, Iowa, Iowa. But the other side of it is also true, where, you know, we don't think about Iowa as having prolific passing games, and that came back to bite them. And Iowa had so much turnover luck. And look, I know you force turnovers, you can knock the ball out and tip pass and all that stuff, but there's a lot of luck that goes into turnovers. And Iowa was just on a ridiculous, unsustainable streak with turnovers. And then, when you're not plus four or whatever in turnovers, suddenly it's a lot harder to win. And Purdue, Jeff Brohm, give him credit. He's an interesting name on the coaching carousel because
they knocked off Ohio State
a couple years ago. People thought he was the next hot thing, and then Purdue's been down, and a win over Iowa helps. An interesting program there. I'm still not buying the Boilers yet. My mom went to Purdue, so I'm not down there. I'm not ready to buy into my mom's alma mater just yet, but they give them credit for knocking off Iowa, and Iowa kind of falling back to earth where they probably should have been for a while.
Speaking of one-time hot coaches, Matt Campbell, his Iowa State Cyclones will stay in the state. They're hosting a team that I don't think a lot of people are paying enough attention to, the Oklahoma State Cowboys, 6-0, now ranked number 8th. What do you think of OSU?
Yeah, I don't have a good read on them yet. I just don't. When I think Oklahoma State, I covered that program for a couple years in the Tulsa World.
Yeah.
It's offense. You know, I was there when Justin Blackman was there as one of the – he and Devontae Smith are the two best receivers I've ever seen in person. Brandon Wheaton throwing the ball over the field and all that stuff. And now it's more about Oklahoma State's defense, which I'm still not 100% used to. I want to see – look, Iowa State's still at least a good program. You know, they fell off where they were to start the season. They're not going to live up to the expectations. I would not be surprised at all if Iowa State ended up finishing 9-3 and winning out or something like that, including against Oklahoma State. So I want to see Oklahoma State keep doing it until I start buying in more to Mike Gundy's team.
Yeah. Let me ask you about your AP poll. Obviously you've had to make some changes. I don't know if the Gators are in your top 25 at all.
No.
Oklahoma has kind of eked its way back. Certainly Alabama looks better all of a sudden. So who do you have at least in your top of your bracket there?
Yeah, Georgia's a clear one for me. Cincinnati and OU are 2-3.
Yep.
Yeah, you could flip-flop them, and I wouldn't push back too hard, but that's that. I've got Bama 4, Michigan 5. I'm higher than other people on Oregon at 6 just because I'm still holding that trump card win over Ohio State over them until Oregon loses. Now, I think Oregon's shaky just because they've been so banged up, and I would not be surprised at all if they ended up slipping. But for now, I still think they're ahead of Ohio State. As I go down looking at it, Pitt at 17 is one of the most interesting teams in the country. They lost to Western Michigan early in the season. It's like 44-41 or something. Like, what the heck? You think, oh, well, Pitt sucks. They're just not good. Normal kind of ACC coastal soup. Everybody's 7-5. But they've turned things around. Kenny Pickett is maybe the best quarterback in the country. He's in the top five. He's on the list, which is not something I expected. And they're winning. And, you know, they've got Clemson this week, and Pitt is favored. I'm not sure that I'm buying it quite yet, but they've done quite well. And then I think the other team that I want to give a shout out to in my rankings is the guys I got number 25, UTSA, the Roadrunners. They were giving me crap on Twitter because I called them Texas San Antonio. Our style is we don't use a lot of the acronyms, and I don't know how many fans in Tampa or St. Pete know what UTSA is, but
right.
The Roadrunners are 7-0. They've got a guy named Jeff Traylor, who is their head coach. He's a longtime Texas high school guy who is as Texas high school guy as it gets. And that's what a program like UTSA needs, where if they're going to succeed, it's going to be because they are finding the sleepers in San Antonio and Austin and Dallas and Lubbock and Houston and wherever, that a lot of the other guys, you know, maybe it's too short to play at Texas or too slow to play at A&M or whatever. Those type of, I don't mean this in a negative way, but those type of misfits that aren't just not quite good enough at that level but can still be really good college players, those are the type of guys UTSA needs to find. And obviously, if you look at the record, 7-0, that speaks for itself. And that is set up to be, a sustainable thing for the Roadrunners.
Coming off a 45-0 blasting of Rice at home. So a good showing by UT San Antonio, as we would call them. All right. Well, listen, there's a lot of bye games, bye weeks. We're going to give you a bye weekend, but we're coming back next week, and we're going to dive deep into this Florida, Georgia, the largest cocktail party in Jacksonville. You will be there. I'm excited already for this game. So we're going to catch our breath a little bit. We'll watch some college football, see if USF can get their win, see if Florida State can continue their winning ways, and get ready for the big game, of course, next Saturday as well. Thanks, Matt. We appreciate it.
Sure. Thanks, Rick.
All right. So that leaves one big game we haven't addressed. We'll preview it tomorrow. The Bucs hosting the Chicago Bears, and another quarterback you should be familiar with, Justin Fields, of course, from Ohio State, will be under center. This will be a good one. Probably a little closer than you think, maybe. There's some tough matchups defensively against the Bucs that they'll have to navigate. So we'll dive into that tomorrow and get you ready for Bucs Bears on Sunday at 4:25. Thanks for listening. For Steve Versnick, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.